Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
Dr. Redmond.
And we're back for more Reed is in prison, so they have to do super short episodes. It's really troubling trying to talk about the Reed storyline, because as I think back, I honestly don't remember like which episode the Reed thing happened in. Like that episode's Reed thing happened in. Like, okay, which episode did his friend get killed? Which episode did he try to murder a bunch of people? Like, and I try to think, well, which is which? And it's hard to remember because they're so utterly disconnected from the events of the murders.
I know. You could actually just clip them all out and have a
episode. And honestly, it makes sense to just like, maybe instead of checking in with him every week, just do 1 week about Reed's adventures in prison while everybody else was doing other things.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get right to it.
Okay. Assistance is futile.
Great title, guys.
Oh, God. So they're homage to
the Borg and also nihilism. Their combo reference to the Borg and nihilism. All right, hit me. Go for it. What is
exterminate!
It?
Exterminate!
That's not Borg. Exterminate! That's not
I
Borg
know.
You're thinking of Daleks.
No,
but anyway.
No. I fully well know.
Okay.
That's Daleks. I'm just saying. Exterminate! Yeah.
It's the vibe.
Somebody should have done that a long time ago. But anyway.
It's an excellent vibe. Anyway, go.
When three New York City women are tortured to death and found with their bones crushed, the BAU works with a single mother who claims her son is behind the heinous crimes. Meanwhile, Reed faces a difficult decision after a fellow inmate is threatened.
Okay, so, good use of meanwhile. But hey, nobody juggled anything, so that was a nice change of pace.
Yep.
All right, let's get right to it. The Reed stuff, again, it's just so hard for me to care. Just get that out of the way at the start.
Okay, I'm sitting here shaking my head going, yeah, do we have to?
And again, it's interesting because you see Reed basically trying to get himself killed.
Yeah.
You know, like, because trying to give his cell that Harold Perrineau got him to another, by cutting a deal with the guard who's actually working for... we don't know it yet, but he's actually working for... But anyway, and then, like, trying to give the cell to this random guy he met to save his life, but really to get himself killed. Like, he knows that the result is he's going to get killed by these gangbangers, and he doesn't seem to have a problem with that.
Well,
like, Harold Perrineau is the only one trying to keep him alive.
I know. And I'm going, Harold.
Yeah.
We could have told you. Don't bother.
Yeah, it's like, sometimes assistance is futile. I heard that somewhere. No, it's interesting, because it's like, he's just so self-destructive.
No, and that's, I think people just don't seem to understand that. I mean, I think the idea somehow or another is that he is, you know, his morality is such that he just can't, you know,
see anyone suffering and blah, 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 blah. But, you know,
not what it is. No,
no.
This is because this has no common sense to it.
No,
nothing makes. There is no way you would behave this way unless
in prison, unless you're trying to get yourself killed.
Yeah, unless you're trying to get yourself killed.
Which is exactly what Reed is doing. And it's interesting because you watch the episode and you're like, and they have realistically, Harold Perrineau can't believe what he's saying.
You yeah.
know, like, he can't believe what he's hearing from this guy. And he's like, what are you, crazy? I'm trying to keep you alive here. And he's like, no, I can't. I did stuff to help you. That's it. That's the end of it, you know, and that's all that can happen. And then he gets brutally beaten for his trouble because, you know, and I'm sure that's good for Reed because it, you know, validates his martyr complex.
Yes. Yes. After all. Yeah, that's what we've all decided.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Like, he can't, you know, if he doesn't suffer, well, then he's not a martyr, is he? So martyrs have to suffer. That's the rule.
Yeah.
Oh, so rough to watch, though. So yeah, not a great episode for Reed, and we don't get the is the next week is when Joe Mantegna makes his excuses for not coming to visit him. Is that that's the next episode? Because I wanted to mention that briefly when that happens.
I can't remember. Like, I'm sitting here.
It's tough, okay, right?
When does, I think maybe it is the next episode because it's before he gets beaten. No.
No, I think he gets beaten up at the end of this episode.
That's right.
And that's
right.
Why Joe finally goes to see. It's hard. I mean, that's what I'm saying. These episodes all. Oh, no. It's next week because I think Joe, like. Oh, no, wait. Maybe it is this week because
next
Joe
week
misses
Alfred.
The flight somewhere. Like, Joe misses going to New York or going to Vermont. Like, he misses the flight with them to go see him instead. And I watched this episode yesterday, and like I said, it's hard to remember which Reed plot goes with which episode. So
hey,
it's almost
I
like we
it.
Should just talk about the Reed episodes.
Yeah, I got a better
from the rest.
Excuse.
That's true, you did watch
excuse.
Them last
It was yeah. Tuesday.
There you go. You watched it 2 days ago, whereas I watched it one day.
You don't but have an excuse.
I don't. Well, no, I think and maybe
it blends
maybe
together.
Maybe we just talk about all the Reed stuff at the end, and let's just do the murder plots. We'll talk about all the Reed stuff at the end, the way they should have done it as one episode.
Yeah.
All right. So, assistance is futile. A woman's son is a psychopath, but instead of getting him therapy, she gives him ecstasy. That's it. That's the plot of the episode.
Plot of the episode, and then he decides to go out and kill women.
Yeah, and then he decides to go out and he starts by raping and murdering women, and then because he's on ecstasy now and feeling confident, he can no longer get an erection, so he starts torturing them instead. Thanks, yeah. Joe. I wanted to think about that. Yeah. So, not a lot of solving this week. She just tells them who did it.
Yeah, she just walks into the police station and says, my son did it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know. Like, you know, yeah, there are all these people, I'm sure. And then she says, well, come home and see.
No, but what the best part is, there's this insane scene where she brings them his journal, which is just 100 pages of sexual fantasies about breaking women's bones. And they're like, there's like 1,000 men out there writing detailed sexual fantasies about breaking bones. I don't know why this is, you know, supposed to impress us. And I'm like, what is wrong with you people?
These episodes are nuts.
They really are. These three especially
these three
are just
episodes
crazy.
Are just freaking nuts.
Oh, absolutely.
I watched them and went, what? Why?
What has
I
this
waiting?
Show? No, it feels like, what has this show become when you're watching these three episodes back to back? But just the idea that they are so dismissive of her to start with is madness with the evidence she brings them.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The problem is Reed isn't there.
Yeah, okay.
To take a look at it and go, oh, shit.
So if Reed was there, he would make sure they
took it seriously?
Well, no. If Reed was there, he would just, like, look at where all of the attacks were and where this guy lived, and they're like, there could be a connection based on my geographic profile.
Profiling, but at least he would take her seriously.
That's
based
true.
On
least, geographic that's true. The geo profile.
Yeah. I mean, and Joe Mantegna, my good God.
I know. The way he dismisses
David Rossi,
disturbing. Like, it really is disturbing that he dismisses it just completely out of hand. Like, doesn't even consider it for a second. It's madness.
And then all of a sudden, so as she says, come back home.
Yeah, come back home. And it's like, oh, wait, here's his giant torture wall. Like, giant wall full of torture fantasies. Okay, well, you might be on to something. At this point, I'm willing to say you might be on. You know what it's like? It's like the funniest moment in the entire show Inside, where they're like, where the scene where Joel Green is talking to them about, I can't imagine that the guy who works at my shop is the killer. And they're like, lay down all of the, they lay all of the evidence. He's like, oh, then you probably want to know about the demons he thinks are trying to kill him.
I know,
Is that, like, it's so obvious. Why did she not start with, like, I admit the diary is bad, but why do you not start with, he has a shrine to torturing women in the basement? And pictures of broken bones. Like, start with that. Lead with the important piece of information, woman.
Well, except she's feeling guilty, and she doesn't want to really tell them that it's her fault.
That's true. It gets her away. Yeah, that she gave him the ecstasy. And I mean, I understand why she holds that part back. Like, I completely get why she holds that part back. Because, I mean, she doesn't even know that that's why he's doing it now, but she has good reason to suspect. So it's like, I do get why she holds that back, and I don't completely blame her for being so reticent on that front. But it's like, she comes to them with the best suspect they could possibly have, a guy the exact right age range for the victims, who is obsessed with breaking women's bones.
Yeah.
But they're still so reticent until they see his evidence dungeon. But it gets worse because, okay, he goes, they're like, okay, well, where would he likely be? And she's like, well, the old apartment. And which makes perfect sense because, you know, the old apartment is where he first saw and was aroused by broken bones, and he has a big emotional connection to there. So they rush over, and here is the craziest part of the entire episode. He rushes over to the old apartment. Sorry, the team does. They kick down the door. Well, no, they bolt cutter open the locked door. They hear a woman screaming inside. They open it up. They find a woman with broken fingers. They rescue her, and they immediately set up a crime scene warning him away. Because think about that character for a moment, because the writer sure didn't. That character doesn't know that the cops are onto him. For all he knows, he has a woman tied up back at his apartment ready to be murdered. Literally, all they had to do to catch him was rescue her, surreptitiously take her to the hospital, put a new lock back on the door, or a new chain back on the door with the same lock, however, like, wait for him to come back and arrest him. But this is where the episode screws up. They have him, they both have him not know the cops are onto him, but never come back to the house apartment either. And it's weird. Like, that is a weird mistake to make by the creators.
Ah, it's Virgil.
No, it's Virgil Williams. It's a very sloppy episode.
Yeah.
Like, even for him, this is an extremely sloppy episode, because there's no reason for him to not come back and finish the job on that woman unless he came back to finish the job on that woman and saw cop cars outside.
Yeah.
But if he had done that, he wouldn't be surprised later when his face is all over the television as the bone killer.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I know. I'm
sitting here going, what am I supposed to say?
No, I'm right. It's like, you're right. But this is the thing where being right doesn't affect anything. Like, it doesn't make it any better to be right. I am right, but it's also, you know, what are you going to do? Criminal Minds is just bad at plotting.
And well, that's and all this there one is to just, it. Yeah.
This one is especially bad. Because it just doesn't make sense that he wouldn't come back for this woman. But the thing is, and it's like, all you have to do, you can just have, obviously, I'd be criticizing them for being idiots if they didn't set up a trap, but you could say that he, what do you call it, from a writing standpoint, you can say, oh, well, in an amazing coincidence, he gets there, right? He gets there just as they're wheeling the woman out in an ambulance, right? But then you don't get the scene later where he finds out he's on TV. Well, you don't need that scene. Like, him knowing he's being hunted by the cops doesn't change anything about the plot. He's just going to decompensate and try to go out in a blaze of glory, right? He's going to do that no matter what. So you don't need a scene where he sees his face on TV. You can just have a scene where he sees from across the street that they're wheeling the woman out on a stretcher, and he's like, oh, hell, and he goes to ground, and then he hunts someone else. Like, you don't need the bar scene. It doesn't help anything. Except they want to establish, oh, well, he uses ecstasy to get himself amped up for murder. But again, do you need that? Like, she tells us that. We can show, you can show him taking the ecstasy on the street while watching ladies. You don't need the bar scene, is what I'm saying. Also, by the way, I love that they they get to the ecstasy because they profile that he would have no confidence or ability to charm women, so he must have some way to do that, but that, you don't know that he's charming women.
No.
He could just be clubbing women in the back of the head and throwing them in his van. You haven't talked to any of his victims. Which is what we saw. Which is what he actually ends up doing. He clubs a woman in the, in the front, but the point is, he clubs a woman and he throws him in his van. Like, so in the end, their entire profile is based on the assumption that he has low self-esteem and can't communicate with women. And then they get to the ecstasy thing by saying, but how could he possibly have, you know, the nerve to go up and talk to women to lure them into his van? And the answer is he wouldn't. He can just club them and
throw them in his van.
Yeah, throw them in the van. Like, he doesn't need to charm them. And so they get to this whole thing of blaming the mother because she gave him ecstasy, but they had none of the steps to get to that blame. Like, they went straight to the blaming the mother without doing any of the intermediary work necessary to get there. Because they don't know how he operates, they can't say, oh, well, he used to be timid, now he's not timid, why could you do that? Drugs could do that. And they trace to the mother and they ask her, what are you hiding? And blah, 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 blah. And they get there. But because we never learn what his MO is, even though we have a living witness we could talk to and find out what his MO is.
MO is, yeah.
Like, there's no honest way to get there. And I swear to God, like, maybe they couldn't pay that actress for a second day because Tatum O'Neal was so expensive.
Expensive, yeah, maybe. Right?
I don't know, but I'm saying it's a weird episode as a result.
It's part of, right? Yeah. And the funny thing is, okay, this is absolutely apropos of nothing except Please. That when you were talking and I was thinking about, okay, like we watch, first of all, the episode is constantly chopped up with the Reed stuff, right?
Yeah. They so constantly have to cut back to Reed.
Yeah, right? And so I'm going, and then along came Jones, tall, thin Jones, slow-walking Jones, slow-talking Jones. You know, that's, I don't know why that song. There's a song, right? No
well,
one
people know it's a song.
Yeah. But I'm just sitting there going, right? I was just going, I don't know why, because you're talking about the episode, and then I'm going, and then along came Jones.
Okay. I'll just
and
accept
it's only
that.
Because, well, Reed is tall and thin and lanky, I guess.
Yeah, but it's just, like, yeah, he keeps just zipping into the episode, breaking the flow of the episode. It's true.
Know, so in my head, right, was your time going, and then along came. Yeah, it came into my head all by myself. All I didn't think about it. It was nothing. So all I can say is that probably it's because Reed is tall and skinny. And
I get it. And it keeps interrupting the flow. And what I think, I would not be surprised if we got to ask Virgil Williams about it. I would not be surprised if the stuff we're complaining about, like, had been in his script. If there had been, like, a scene of why he didn't go back to the house, and there had been a scene interviewing the victim and finding out that he was strangely confident, and that doesn't track with what the mother said about him always hiding in the basement, blah, 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 blah. Right? I think there's a good chance that was all in there. And then they had to cut so much out of the episode because of all the Reed stuff that they're left with an incoherent mess. And I think that's what happened over and over again this year. Like, for this whole back nine episodes, right? I think so much had to be cut out of every episode to service the Reed storyline that we end up with a series of completely incoherent nonsense episodes. That is my suspicion. Obviously, we would have to talk to the producers to confirm that. I think we can both agree that even for late Criminal Minds, these episodes are really sloppy and incoherent.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure that.
But I think the Reed story is doing that.
Well, look, if I'm going to end up with, who was it, the Coasters or somebody? I don't even know who sang the damn thing.
That stuck in your
head.
You
know, you know, I mean, it's just like, who the hell sang it? But it was, I mean, it was some bizarre nonsense song.
Yeah.
I mean, when I'm thinking about it, because that's how it feels. Right. Like, you know, like you get a little bit of story and then along comes Reed.
Yeah. And he just comes in and he takes over the plot. Yeah. And then we're like, okay, well, where were, and honestly, the episode, and I can imagine that, you know how famously there's that episode where Tim Omundson, you know, shoots the cop in the middle of the park in his car, yeah. And then it goes to commercial, and we're supposed to not notice that he then had to drive the car away somehow without anyone noticing.
Yeah.
Right? And in the same way, I feel like a lot, it's possible that if, I mean, I don't know if this is thought of as a good or bad episode, but I think probably a huge amount of people watching this episode might not have even noticed how incoherent the main plot is, because the Reed story comes in and it distracts you.
Yeah, it completely distracts you. And it's that way, you know, constantly with the Reed. I still don't know why they had the Reed story to begin with.
I mean, I don't know. I can't explain that. I don't have, I mean, I guess they wanted to do another arc with a supervillain, you know, and they went with Aubrey Plaza. Yeah.
Well, it may be. Well, here's what happens. They had put together the entire Bible for this season.
Yeah.
But Hotch was supposed to be there.
Yeah. And the focus of his thing with, the focus was going to be his
Lewis.
Showdown with,
Lewis.
Mr. Scratch, Peter Lewis. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, we just lost Hotch. I guess
and then
we bring back Aubrey Plaza. And do that same kind of arc thing, but with Aubrey Plaza instead. Because she had that connection with Reed.
Yeah, and then focus the whole season, half season, the last
Reed.
Half of the season on Reed.
Yeah.
But then decided, I don't know, and then decided to chop things. Like,
I'm sure just they don't know. And I think this is the point. They don't know how to do the show if there's not a murder every week. If there's not a case every week. Like, in the entire history of the show, we've only had two episodes ever where there wasn't, like, just focused on the case every week. And they should have, as we keep saying, what they should have done was just have the occasional line that Reed's going through stuff in the background of episodes, and then done just a whole episode about all of this, about the 2 months. Like, tell the whole 2 month story of Reed in prison, just focusing on Reed for that whole episode. But they don't have the confidence to do that. They honestly believe that if it doesn't have the exact format of Criminal Minds, if there's not a murder every week, if there's not the three victim structure, you know, every single week, people are going to stop watching, and then that's that.
But that isn't. I mean, everybody would be dying for a whole episode with Reed.
I agree.
Everybody.
And you agree. I just suspect they didn't have the confidence to try it. Because they took them till, they did one off-standard episode, the amazing episode with the stalker and the battered woman, right? And then they didn't do another off-model episode for 12 years, and then the, fourth last episode is an off-model episode. Like, this was the perfect time to experiment with the structure of Criminal Minds, but they just didn't have the confidence to do it.
We all know who the showrunner and executive
I know. We know. Hey, I'm not saying we don't know who to blame. I'm just saying what happened.
It's just so bad. Yeah. And they don't know how to write an episode, a shorter episode.
It's true. They really
don't. I mean, because you're spending, 15 minutes with Reed?
Yeah, 15 minutes. So you only have 25 minutes to tell a story. And they don't know how to tell this story in 25 minutes. They don't. And that's what this episode clearly shows. Here's what I'm sad about in the episode. And maybe this is silly, and maybe it's going to come across like a joke. But do you know what I really wish had happened at the end of the episode? Huh? The guy had attempted to kill himself by throwing himself off a roof, which is what happens. But it was only two stories because he didn't know that there was another building just to the left there. And so he broke his arms and his legs but didn't die. And now he's there. And now he's the one with the shattered body, but he's still going to go to jail. That would have been pretty funny. And it would have been the perfect punishment for the character.
And it would have had some irony in it.
Yeah, there would have been a nice dramatic irony to that.
Yes, there would have been, but I don't even know if they know what the word irony means. So,
I know.
You know, and besides, this is all after 9/11 when irony became dead.
That's true. It was the death of irony.
Remember?
I
and that
remember.
Was my friend who did that. Asshole, Braden. But anyway.
Yeah, well, Raiden's got his own stuff to deal with.
Yeah, well, we won't go into irony. Political stuff. Anyway, yeah, I don't know what I was watching this last, over the last couple of days. I've been on and off watching some CSI. And of course, Criminal Minds is on every Wednesday, I think, now on this CTV drama channel.
Okay.
So I had watched some CSI, so the Las Vegas, the original, and then,
right,
you know, and I'm just thinking, yeah, they knew how to, yeah, they do have that stupid twist all the time.
Oh, every episode.
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw it a couple of times in the few episodes that I watched. Well, you know, you really shouldn't have done it because he wasn't cheating on you.
Oh, it's every episode. Yeah. I like every single episode of CSI is, you thought that man was there to serial kill you, but really he was just trying to bring you a box of candy. You didn't have to murder him at all. Every single episode of CSI is an O. Henry fable. Every single one.
You know, but every now and then they did. And see, and then I watched a couple of episodes of CSI Miami. My good God, it is so such a relief. Watching these episodes, it's just because no matter what you can say, you can laugh your head off. You could.
Oh, it's the funniest show in the world.
And you don't have to. You don't have to. And every now and then, I was watching it and just going, "Yeah, they gotta know that what they're doing."
No. I swear to God, all the producers, all of the writers, the people doing the editing, the people doing the scoring, every single person working on CSI Miami, except for the cast, knew they were making a comedy. All of them. Even the guest stars often knew it was a comedy, but didn't tell David Caruso. You know, Poppy Montgomery, David Caruso, Adam Rodriguez, none of these people know they're in a comedy, right? Everybody else knows they're in a comedy.
But it is just such a wonderful show to watch. It's so much easier. Yeah, you can take it, and it's not, I mean, sometimes, and there are such horrible things that can happen sometimes, but you don't, at least in those, you don't get the O. Henry twists.
No, you don't have, you know, it's just, there's just a murder and it's entertaining. And it also gives us Ron, one of my favorite characters in just fiction.
Yeah.
And
so
if people haven't watched the show, I did a whole extended blog post on Vargetlon.com about the character Ron. Who Kim Coates plays, and he is he's magnificent, but B, it's one of these weird situations where it's like everybody working on the show knew how magnificent he was, so he gets treated completely different from every other character on the show, and it's fantastic to watch. I have a whole theory about it that I'm not going to get into here.
No,
because we're moving on to the next episode of Criminal Minds.
Called in the Dark.
I'm already laughing. That's how ridiculous this episode is. Go, hit me. Go for it. Just get started. Go for it.
When two radically different killing sprees take place in Burlington, Vermont, the BAU sets out to determine if two different serial killers are working in concert, or if a lone serial killer is behind both sprees.
Meanwhile.
Alves presents Shaw with an ultimatum after Reed is assaulted.
Do, 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 do. All right. Let's get to it.
Sure.
Absolutely, let's get to it. Oh, yeah, so you know, it was the first episode that Joe had copped out of visiting Reed for so long because he's a bad friend. All right, it was the first episode because Alves is the second one and then Reed poisons people is the third one. All right, let's get to it. So this is one of the silliest episodes they've ever done. Literally ever. Because we are asked to believe that a man could sleepwalk from his house, like grab a knife from his house, walk all the way across town without anyone noticing a man in pajamas walking across town at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. Because we see that this isn't happening that late at night.
No, it's like not. 9, people 10 o'clock. Are still up.
Yeah, everybody's still awake when he's coming over to kill them. So it's like he's walking around in his pajamas, barefoot, holding a knife, just walking through Burlington, Vermont. and nobody sees him and mentions it to anybody.
Yeah, and finds all these whorehouses that his father took him to.
And just murders whoever's there.
Yeah. And how many whorehouses are there in Burlington, Vermont? What?
Apparently his dad found a lot of different whorehouses. I'm as surprised as anyone.
Sorry.
Burlington, Vermont, back in the 80s, was like the brothel capital of New England, it would seem.
Clearly. And, I mean, we used to go to Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah, like, it just seems a bit of a stretch. I like that I call it a bit of a stretch when it's the most ludicrous episode they've done in...
Oh, by the way, in Vermont, yes. Vermont yeah. is one of the few places in the United States that doesn't seem to be downloading any of our episodes, any of our podcasts. Every
you
place
monsters.
Else, even in the Montanas, even in Utah, there's obviously somebody who's downloading.
Let's keep
like
bad-mouthing Vermont then. anyway, seriously, though, no, it's an insane episode because this is how, and I want to point out how they figure out he's a sleepwalker. Because when you hear, just think about how they figure out he's a sleepwalker. So he came to this house and he murdered two people. And during the fight, a bottle fell on the floor and he stepped on the bottle and he sliced his foot wide open, which somehow didn't wake him up. But, you know, like having a gun go off near him, that wakes him up. But, slicing his foot right open, no, that doesn't wake him up. You know what? I don't know how sleepwalkers work. Let's assume that's true. Here's where it gets crazy. Gets so crazy. And then we cut to him waking up in his house and finding out he has a giant hole in his foot and seeing bloody footprints leading to his bed. That means gushing blood from his foot, he walked out of the house, walked all the way across town home, and he was still bleeding enough that he left bloody footprints in his own house. Meaning all you had to do to catch this man... was just walk out the front door and follow the bloody footprints back to his house.
Like I said.
But they could not be bothered to do that. And don't tell me, well, what if he walked through the woods? And the footprints were hard to see. That's why God invented bloodhounds, okay? He left a blood... They can't be bothered to follow bloody footprints from a crime scene. No, we've got to figure this out psychologically. Would they even read a confession if he had left one? Or are they so dedicated to figuring it out for themselves? I know. It's such a silly episode.
I know. It's
ridiculous.
Silly.
It is one of the most ridiculous episodes they've ever done. And literally, like, he kills a lot of people. Like, he just goes to house after house after house because he's already gone to one house before they go. Yeah. And then he kills that guy who's working out in the middle of the night. Right? And then the next night he kills two more people. And then the next night he attacks that guy, but gets woken up by the shotgun blast and flees. And then the next night he goes to attack that other woman. They catch him. And I'm like, this is an unusually long amount of time for an episode of Criminal Minds to take place over.
They didn't do as much with Reed.
Well, no, I think it's because not the actual episode. I'm just saying the timing of the episode. Like episodes of Criminal Minds usually aren't set over 5 days. They're usually set over about a day and a half.
Yeah.
You know, they get there and then they get there just as there's been a murder. There's another murder that night and then they solve the crime the next day. Like now, usually a day and a half is all it takes to kill them. This episode takes place over 4 or 5 days, which is very weird, but the killer is very limited in what he can do because he can only sleepwalk and kill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now I have to ask you something.
Please.
Do you know who is the most famous mayor of Burlington?
Yeah, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Everybody knows about Bernie Sanders. Famous mayor of Vermont.
Burlington.
Burlington, Vermont. Yeah. Yes, Burlington, Vermont. So there you go. And so he, you know what? I guess he was doing... Maybe he's the one who cleaned up all the whorehouses
in Burlington. In the 80s.
That would be fantastic. That would be nice. That would be a nice twist. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we shouldn't laugh this much, but it's pretty bad.
It was just such a bad, silly episode.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, yeah. As you said, I mean, there is so many different things in the fact that they're going, oh, but there couldn't possibly be two. But they're, you know, and then it turns out, and I'm going, well, maybe his, you know, at one point I was thinking, well, geez, you know, maybe his therapist gave him what, I don't know, Ativan, one of those sleeping pills that they give people that cause them to sleepwalk.
Oh, yeah, right. That could have been it.
You know, and then his therapist wouldn't talk to him?
Yeah, that's weird that his therapist, like, went away on vacation.
Or whatever.
And, like, it does not have an emergency way to contact him. Or her.
This guy has got to be.
Yeah, this guy is obviously a bat skit case. Like, he's been, like, dealing with the results of the abuse at the hands of his father for, you know, decades at this point. The brutal abuse at the hands of his father for his entire childhood. He's been dealing with it for decades. His dad just died. He's at such loose ends that he started sniping other poachers in the woods.
Because he can't kill his father.
Because he can't kill his father. Right? And so, of course, he should be a complete mess. And his therapist should know that. But then again, in the world of criminal minds, there's a lot of bad therapists out there.
What, therapy? Oh, that doesn't really
that doesn't
exist.
Work. No. Yeah, I've heard that helping is futile. Sorry, assistance is futile. Damn it. Ah! I screwed it up. Sorry.
Helping makes sense in this point, but it would be the continuing. Yeah, that's it. You could have called this not in the dark, but helping is futile. Assistance is futile.
But so anyway, they look at the locations where he's done all the killing, and every single one of them was a whorehouse, and there's one more whorehouse in that neighborhood, and they call the woman who lives there, and they interrupt the guy. And that's how the episode ends.
There might have even been more whorehouses.
Well, no, because if there were more whorehouses, they wouldn't know the one place for him that he could possibly go to. No, there's only one whorehouse left. That he was that either existed or that his father had been connected to. Do I remember the exact detail? No, but it's such a silly episode that it doesn't matter.
Who cares?
We do not have to take this episode's plot in any way seriously. It's about a killer sleepwalker. No, you can just dismiss this episode entirely. Speaking of, let's move to the third episode.
Okay. And this one, Erica Messer apparently wrote.
Yeah.
And Simon Mirren directed.
Oh, really? Wow.
Hell's Kitchen.
There you go.
The best of the three episodes.
Oh, definitely. 100%. Still ludicrous. Best of the three.
Best of the three. Yeah. The BAU returns to New York City to identify a killer with an unquenchable thirst. After a 16-year-old girl disappears from the Hell's Kitchen neighborhood, and the investigation is connected to two cold cases. Meanwhile, Reed makes a bold decision that threatens to place his well-being in jeopardy.
All right. So we'll get to the Reed stuff in a minute. Let's just go through this plot quickly. And so if you listen to our last week's episode, you will have heard me embarrassingly get these two episodes confused. The first episode and this episode confused. Because, and I'm like, what? Well, first off, they're both in New York.
Yeah.
They're both in New York. But then the first one talks about when they talk about the dead bodies this time, they all have like broken legs and arms and ribs. And so I actually got confused in my memory that it was all one guy doing all of this. But no, those women, the first guy, loved breaking women's limbs because he loved torture. Whereas this guy, women got their limbs broken because they all eventually tried to escape and fell down a pit in the sewer. Like, he wasn't breaking women's limbs for sport or out of, like, some sick desire. It's, I think, and if you think I'm wrong about this, just tell me, but I think it's implied in the episode that he's not, like, actively trying to kill this woman. It's just eventually they try to escape, and the sewer's a very dangerous place. And they, you know, get crippled, and then he, quote-unquote, puts them out of their misery and then leaves them in the most dignified way possible.
That seems to be what the episode is saying.
Yes.
That he doesn't really want to kill any of these women, but it's the only way he can continue to exist.
Yes. And he needs them to drain their blood. And then eventually, sometimes, you know, they get killed in injuries. Then he's got to find a new one. So, you know, it's, I gotta say, like, it's not a terrible episode. It's kind of dumb, but, you know, because there's a vampire living in the sewers of New York, kidnapping women like he's, the Phantom of the Opera and, like, tragic figure and all this nonsense. And, like, but honestly, like, after these other two episodes, I don't know if it's a Stockholm Syndrome. They're, like, beating me down. But I just feel like I watched this episode and I'm like, okay, sure. Sure, guy. Why not?
Why not? It's the one that makes sort of the clearest definable sense.
Absolutely.
From beginning to end. Although I'm going, okay, so isn't Hell's Kitchen supposed to be a terrible place?
Well, it used to be. It's actually been almost completely gentrified now.
Okay, in 2017.
By 2017, yeah.
If Hell's Kitchen is so gentrified, I do not know why this mother was screaming so much about her daughter being in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Right? That get the impression that she was sending her daughter off into a scummy place that her daughter was going off to visit the father.
Yeah. Maybe like she's just saying it's more dangerous because she was pissed off that she was visiting the father without telling her, and she's just like exaggerating her fears about Hell's Kitchen or something like that.
Yeah, it I don't know.
Just
yeah,
be a I mean, custody thing.
I guess maybe I'm sort of dealing with something sort of similar. So I'm
okay right
now with somebody else, and I'm just going.
You happen to know people who are dealing with similar custody situations, so personally, it triggers you in a different way than it might.
Yeah, mean. And I'm listening to it, and I'm going, okay, woman, do you really want your 16-year-old daughter to choose to live with her father full time? Because she's 16 and she's
legally allowed to. Yeah. And if you keep acting like this, that's going to be the result.
That's going to be the result. As I said, jeez.
Yeah. No, anyway, she does seem pretty unreasonable.
And the 16-year-old daughter seems to be pretty, pretty together.
Yeah. Like she handles, and it's like that. This is the second time this year we've had a victim that like knew exactly like
how just, to handle themselves.
Yeah, exactly how to handle the situation.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps that unlike the Scarecrow, that woman's far more impressive. Cherry is far more impressive because the Scarecrow legitimately was planning to murder her. And this guy just thinks of himself as a tragic victim who doesn't want to hurt anybody, but it's a necessity for him to stay alive because he's a vampire.
Yeah.
And poor guy, like he actually does. It's not like one of the crazy vampires. This guy actually does have sun sensitivity. Drinking blood isn't the way to fix it, but he does actually have sun sensitivity. He actually does have a genetic deficiency. They guessed that right about him. And it's interesting, but it's like this guy is much easier to handle. But again, you do have to applaud this girl for figuring out exactly how to handle him in a way that so many of the victims don't on this show.
Yeah.
You know, that so many of the victims never figure out how to deal with these people and they get killed as a result. So it's nice and it's refreshing to see a character who's just like completely on the ball, never loses her head, never panics. You can say, well, she panicked when she fled, but I'm like, not even really. She doesn't really panic that much. It's just, scary to run into pitch black tunnels.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm completely with her on her whole journey this episode. And again, this is the second time this year we've had like a legit impressive heroine in an episode. So I was very happy to see that. So yeah, like this is what, I mean, again, because it has to split its focus, it doesn't have time to develop much, but it is one of the stronger episodes this year, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is. they managed to write this one within a 25-minute timeline.
Yeah, exactly. It's better than most we've seen in fitting it into that timeline. Oh, God. It is weird that, like, they're so busy with the... because it's weird, their assumption this whole half a season is that Peter Lewis has framed Reed for murder, right?
Yep, yep.
But they don't look into Mr. Scratch at all.
Well, no,
later,
no.
Later
What's
we're
his
told,
face?
No, later we're told that Steven was face? Actually looking into Mr. Scratch this whole time. But yeah. We never see it in an episode, is what I mean.
No.
Like, he never comes up this entire season, and it's kind of strange. When they're all that they should be thinking about is rescuing Reed, it never really comes up. But I would say that this... Okay, and tell me if I'm crazy here, but is this, like... one of the most sympathetic murderers we've ever had on the show?
Sympathetic murderers. Yeah, no. I mean, he is sympathetic.
Yeah. Like, he's not a good guy, and I'm not sad that he's really sad that he's dead at the end, but the show has gone out of its way to craft a guy who, like, really doesn't want to, like, fundamentally, you feel like he's not doing this out of, like, almost every single killer we see. It's the reason serial killers are so loathsome is because it's badly aimed sexuality, right?
Yeah,
that's why they're all not just awful and they're so loathsome, and there honestly doesn't seem to be any of that component to this.
No, which makes it a whole different episode.
Yeah, it makes it feel completely different, and you can actually see that there is a little bit of tragedy to this man's life.
Yeah. But we never get...
Yes, we never get?
We never get any backstory, so...
Well, we get a little bit. Like, he was abandoned by his parents, and he was raised by his Vietnam veteran uncle.
Yes, but...
Who, was pretty messed up in his own way.
Yeah, well, he came out of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, no, exactly. Plenty of people came out of the Vietnam War very messed up. So, yeah, and he's just one of them. I found it interesting that the show manages to, because, like, normally when the show is sympathetic to one of its killers, we end up disgusted that they were sympathetic to the killer and, like, ashamed to have watched that episode. Like, what are you thinking? And this is one of the few times where you're like, no, I get it. Like, this guy, he had one of the roughest breaks of any character on the show, and... he didn't deal with it particularly well, but at least you completely understand where he's coming from. So, yeah, I'm not saying it's important, like, the fact that he is the most sympathetic character is important, or, you know, like, he deserves a pass or anything like that, but I just think it's interesting that this manages to be, if not the most, one of the most sympathetic characters, killers, we've ever had on the show.
Yeah, probably, but I think this, for this season, you're Stockholming it.
That's true. I think this season has been so terrible overall that I am looking for good things just to have some, so to make it feel like the whole thing isn't a complete waste.
Well, we have to come up with, you know, a best some and a reason. Worst.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. And I might be looking for that best and worst a little too hard.
No, the worst is easy.
Oh, you're right. Okay. What am I saying?
Yeah.
That's true.
Anyway, no, I mean, it's. No, he's slowly, but it's mostly, what I would say about that, though, is that he seems more sympathetic because she talks him around.
That's true. She brings it out in him.
She gets around him because I suspect that with the other girls.
He was much scarier.
He was probably much scarier. She was just smarter.
That's true.
Right?
But it's interesting because you don't have any sympathy for Scarecrow. Even though, once again, you get a woman to talk through where his damage came from and, you know, how he ended up like this. You still, because it's misaimed sexuality and brutality to women, right? Like, the stuff she brings out in this guy, it's not, you're right, it is mostly her doing the heavy lifting to make him sympathetic. Yeah. But it's also that she found a guy who really doesn't want to be a villain.
Doesn't want to, but he hasn't figured out any other way to be.
Exactly. He can't see any other way to live.
And the thing is because he got raised by his uncle.
Yeah,
who
exactly.
Was a Vietnam vet and was probably a basket case. So
he was absolutely a basket case with PTSD, and he didn't understand that, you know, and the thing is, when you feel like you've been abandoned by everyone in your life, as plenty of Vietnam veterans had every right to feel.
Yeah.
When their government abandoned them and it was horrific, like, he would be raised thinking that there's no help for him and he has to do it all on his own, especially after his uncle dies. Like, the one person who took care of him dies. He feels like he's all on his own, and so he goes to these extreme lengths.
Yeah, and he comes up with this bizarre way.
Well, and to there fix is, himself. And the thing is, I say there's no sexual assault component. Obviously, on some level, he needs, because he is a heterosexual man with normal drives, he does, like, this whole taking the blood of women is misplaced sexuality in a different way, because he wants companionship. He wants female companionship, and this is how he has rationalized it.
Yeah.
Right? This is how he, you know, the Hunchback of Notre Dame style, the Phantom of the Opera has rationalized it, and he has come up with a reason that he's not the villain. And yes, it's just as deluded as all of the other serial killers we talk about, but I don't think it is as cruel. All right, so that was 20 minutes of me defending a serial killer, apparently. Didn't think we'd end up there today.
No.
Well, no, because it's one of the least awful episodes we've seen all year. No, it's Stockholm, you're right. I am going too far to try and defend it, and later I will be embarrassed to have said all of this. So you don't have to tell me to. Later I will be embarrassed to have said all this. So let's talk about the Reed plot, though. So the first episode, he talks to Joe, because Joe hasn't been going to visit him, because Joe doesn't like feeling powerless and needs to make everything about himself, so he can't just suck it up and be there for his friend. Yeah. Because that's who Joe is. Unbelievably, you know, toxically narcissistic and self-centered man. That's just who Joe is. That's who Joe's always been.
We call him David.
Oh, God. David Rossi is... You're right. Not saying that about Joe Mantegna. I want to make that clear. That's who David Rossi is. And that's who David Rossi's always been. And the show demonstrates him in that not super positive light. And it takes guts for the show to do that. So, respect, show. Way to go. One thing I'll mention about these episodes, in the last episode of the season, Derek will come back.
Yeah.
Right? And it really is terrible that we didn't have mention, like I don't believe that, and I know it's because they can't get the actor back, but you have to assume that Derek would have visited him in prison, and they try to explain they didn't, because they didn't want to tell Derek about it, because he would have rushed to and interrupt his life and blah, 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 blah.
No,
yeah, you don't have to tell Derek about it. It's national news.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a big story that an FBI agent murdered a doctor in Mexico and is now in federal prison. That would have been on the news. Derek would have heard about it. Reporters would have called him because he worked with the murderer for years. So yeah, like, the idea that, like, they would have even been in a position to not tell Derek about it is completely delusional.
Well, you know that for this particular FBI group, the news never pays any attention to them whatsoever. Unless the plot requires it to. Yes. I mean, people disappear, you know, and yet, you know, they're plastered all over because they're in the 10 most wanted. They're plastered all over. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, yeah, give me a break. But, you know, they just wanted to suck Derek into the last episode.
Yeah. And so then we get the middle episode, which is Luke
going
to visit Harold Perrineau, and we get the story of Harold Perrineau getting a lady pregnant and murdering her and then feeling guilty about it and volunteering to go to prison.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's fine. He's paying his dues. It's an interesting thing to do with the character. It's an interesting bit of backstory. And my question becomes, like, what on earth, right? I'm just saying, it's like, what do they expect us to get out of this?
I don't know. See, I don't even know how come Shaw has so much power in prison.
It's weird, right? He doesn't run a gang.
He's nothing, and I can't figure it out. And yes, he murdered someone, so he has a level of respect. Yeah. And he admits he's guilty, but I don't understand any of the rest of it. Like,
well, and they keep saying they have this ridiculous thing where it's like, he murdered a snitch and that gets you respect in prison. But it's like, but he murdered the snitch who worked for him.
Yeah.
A police officer.
He was an FBI agent.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like, and everybody knows that.
You know, yeah. I mean, I don't understand why he has
his position,
power.
Yeah.
And why Alves seems to think that Shaw has the power to
keep
to
Reed keep safe.
Safe.
Yeah.
Doesn't.
No, it doesn't track, right?
No, none of it tracks. Like, I love seeing Shaw, because at least we get some reality.
Yeah.
In these episodes.
He's such a good actor.
Yeah. He really
is. Parano is fantastic.
Even if he has lousy words, he can make them sound good.
No,
he can make
them
look good.
He's an amazing actor, and he always has been. But yeah, no, I love him, and I love him here, but it's like, I don't understand the character on a fundamental level. I don't know why he's running for things in prison. I don't know why anyone's scared of him.
Yep.
I don't know why he has guys. Like, how? How is any of this happening?
Yeah.
And the show never explains it. And if he had been a corrupt FBI agent,
okay,
and worked with the mob, I would get how he has connections and weight in prison. Absolutely.
Yes.
He's got plenty of money and he was corrupt. Yes, 100%. But we're told that's not it. That he killed this woman for entirely personal reasons. So, yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't think the Harold Perrineau character makes any sense. But I will say that, like you, I really enjoy watching him.
I really enjoy watching him. So,
yeah,
okay,
he's,
so it
one of the brightest parts
yeah.
of the season is hanging out with Harold Perrineau.
Harold Perrineau, yeah.
It just, you know, doesn't, and none of it tracks logically.
Yeah, and looking at Reed, are you an idiot? There's nothing I can do for you.
I know, and it's like.
And then Reed gets his friend killed.
I know. Wow.
And still doesn't learn his lesson.
I know. And then his response to getting his friend killed is trying to kill everybody. And what do you think the result of that is going to be, Reed? Like, you're either going to jail forever for mass murder, or they're going to kill you if they don't die. But then again, we know what Reed wants. Reed wants someone to kill him without him having to take responsibility for committing suicide. That's what Reed wants. And this is just his latest attempt to do that.
His latest gambit into this.
Yeah.
No, Reed, you should just start doing heroin again.
I know. It would go so much better for you if you just started doing
heroin again.
You know, I'm pretty sure Harold Perrineau can get you some of that.
Some really good stuff.
Some really good heroin.
Ease you off.
Well, no, and that would have been an interesting road for him to go down.
Yeah.
When he was in jail. One thing I will mention in here, and I know that it they needed to happen for the end of the season, but there's something I don't believe at all for a second.
Okay.
And that is that they would keep Reed's mother in Washington. Like, everyone acknowledges that it was a bad idea to bring her to Washington to look over her. Everyone knows that was a bad idea. And it's a much, because they've taken her from, as you've talked about, a person with Alzheimer's, a person with this kind of personality disorders.
And schizophrenia
needs as many, like, familiar locations as possible.
Yeah.
They just need that. And you could say she could kind of not do okay, but at least survive, as long as she had her son there, who she's familiar with to walk her through it. But now that Reed's in jail, they should have shipped her back down to Vegas immediately.
Well, of course.
And there's no believable reason not to have shipped her back down to Vegas immediately, except they need her there for the end of the episode. Because it's like, if she was coming to visit him in prison and he wanted her there, that one thing. But they're lying about where he is.
Yeah.
And it's such a crazy stopgap solution because, best case scenario, he's not going to have a trial for 8 months. They're just going to lie to her about where her son is for 8 months or a year? That's crazy.
And then they take...
No, but just the idea that, like, and I know Reed's got money, and I know David's got money, but you're paying for 24-hour nurses to keep her in an apartment, but she's going to be at her most agitated thing possible because you've got a rotating series of people she doesn't know coming in and out. You'd actually be making the situation worse.
Plus,
a lot worse by keeping her in there.
Plus, anybody who is not, like, who is an Alzheimer's care person would know that that apartment is just about the last place in the world she should be.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it is full of these like books and nooks and crannies. Yep. I can still remember my father-in-law, and oh, the house was just too complicated. And the house, yep. I mean, we didn't have a complicated house, but it was too complicated for him because he was used to living in a one-bedroom apartment, yep. and it had all his life almost.
Exactly. And so you've got this insane situation.
Yeah. Right?
Where this woman is brought to a new alien location, and then her son mysteriously disappears, and every day there's three different women rotating in and out to see her.
Yeah, and every now and then JJ goes
JJ
to see
her. JJ drops
her.
By. A woman she doesn't know at all.
No. Yeah.
It's the idea that they would keep her, and again, you need it to have, I get that they need it to have happen for the end of the season, but you know what? Joe Montana's daughter could have broken her out of a Las Vegas home.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, yep. drugged her and put her in a van and driven her to Virginia. I mean, it's just as preposterous, yep. right? As what happened. I mean, it's no less.
It's almost,
actually, you know what? It's considerably less preposterous than the idea that they were paying for 24-hour nurses for this hostile, barely functional woman in Virginia, like, or in yeah. Maryland. There's yeah. just no way.
I know.
No way. It doesn't make sense.
No. And, you know, it's in, and oh, Reed is, and it is just, I mean, it just fits into our meta Reed. Our meta yeah. Reed, where we can't be surprised at what he's doing here.
Yeah.
And I still don't think that the people who write these episodes understand what they've created.
No, I don't think so either.
You know, I mean, that's pretty clear because every now and then they do weird things with Reed and you just go, no, that isn't even going to work. Yeah. But yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, Reed is self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
And has always been self-destructive. Then there's all that behind the scene stuff. Like we're supposed to just, I think people don't really, the only thing I can think after listening to Erica Messer do that, I think it was the last commentary I heard her do, or one of the previous ones, but I think it was the last one that yeah. was, it was so clear that she sees these as one-off episodes.
Oh, totally.
And she refuses as the
to think, show to see runner. How the characters are growing and changing and yeah.
Yeah, or how they are stuck in they're trapped in these roadmaps that they've created for themselves, or that yeah. the writers created, and that
for them,
that
yes.
somehow
they're not living people, but again,
but it's like everything, like you can get, yeah, they're not real people, but when you've created something that looks. So seems so real, like there's this underlying psychopathy with Reed.
Yeah, there
that's
is.
It's unbelievable that, and it's there, and it's part of the psychopathy of the show itself. But that's going to take to when we finish.
I cannot explain how excited I am. Yeah. We're only two episodes away for me to tell you and all of our listeners, hi. How they could have fixed this season and taken it from a terrible show and Reed as a really awful character to an incredible character and an incredible show. We are just two episodes away. I first told you that I was going to tell you this months ago.
Yes,
I know. It's about to pay off. Be very excited.
Okay.
All right.
Because next week, are we going to do four episodes next week?
No, no, no. We have to devote a whole episode to the last episode of this season. Because again,
so we're
going to be talking about my theory. So we're doing three episodes next week. What are they?
True North.
Which one is True North?
Set in Tucson, Arizona.
Nope.
Three decomposing bodies are found tied to wooden stakes outside Tucson, Arizona.
Yep. Okay. All right. I know which one it is.
North, huh?
Yeah. I forgot what that was.
Yeah. Unforgettable.
Unforgettable? Nope. No, which one's that?
Oh, one of Walker's former colleagues is hospitalized after being injected with a radioactive toxin.
Right. The DOA episode. Yes.
And I'm sitting here thinking, but you've seen these Before.
Quite recently. Yeah, you watched them years ago, and I watched them all last year during my insane marathon of reviewing 100 episodes of Criminal Minds in 150 days, which, that might drive you crazy. It might have driven me crazy. I might be crazy now. But yes, okay. But I mean, the titles are what, I remember what happened. Is the next one The Hum?
No, the next
one's
season
13.
No, this is Greenlight.
Which one's Greenlight?
Well, it's the one before Red Light.
Yes, but what happens in the episode?
When Prentice discovers that Reed's mother has been abducted by...
Oh, right. Yes. I forgot it was a two... Oh, God, you're right. Then we probably... I forgot it was a two-part season ender. All right, I'm a dum-dum. Next week, we'll only do two episodes, and then we're doing the two-part season finale as its own episode. So join us back here next week. I forgot it was a two-parter. I apologize. We'll join us next week for the first two. So that is, if you're watching along, episode 19 and episode 20. We'll be back in 2 weeks for for 21 and 22 in our grand season finale, and I finally pay off all this nonsense I've been talking about for a year. So that should be fun, I hope. So if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you'd like to suggest some profiling related fiction you think we should check out, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you. Oh, yes. And if you're listening to this on a podcast client or use a service like that, be sure to leave us a review. That is how new people find the show, by reading reviews of it. We will see you back here next week, next Thursday, for more Criminal Minds. But until then, I'm going to say au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.